Well, welcome to Live Music Friday here on WKAR's Current State. I'm Mark Bayshore. We want to point out right at the very top that we, up to our morning listeners here, that we are streaming our program live today on our Facebook page, Current State from WKAR. Check that out if it's not 9 o'clock in the morning right now when you're hearing this. You'll be able to see the file posted to our website or Facebook page here in no time at all. So check that out, first of all. And we've got a musical performance to start the program here today. Ryan Shadbolt is back to perform live for us today. Ryan and the Weathermen have a release party tonight scheduled for their new CD called Michigandering. This will happen at the Robin Theater. We're going to open up with the band here today with the Backache Blues.
Here I go again, singing the blues. This time it's about the pain in my back. When sciatica radiates down my legs, the pain is sharp and it aches. Yes, those backache blues.
Backache blues.
Please pass me by today. Yes, those
backache blues.
Please pass me by today. I went to the doctor the other day. Another script is what they always say. But those pills never shake the pain I'm in. Or the numbness down the side of my shin. Yes, those backache blues.
Backache blues.
Please pass me by today. Yes, those
backache blues.
Please pass me by today. Day. It's surreal to think of my pain cut away, but my backache has subsided, and I'm finally glad I've decided to shake those backache blues.
Backache blues.
Don't you ever come back to me. Yes, those
backache
blues. Don't you ever come back to me. Yes, those backache blues.
Backache blues.
Don't you ever come back to me. Yes, those
backache
blues. Don't you ever come back to me.
Backache Blues, Ryan Shadbolt and the Weathermen live here in Studio S at WKAR on Current State's Live Music Friday. The band's burning the candle at both ends here with a morning performance on Current State, and tonight at the Robin Theater, it's their release party, performance party, however you want to describe it, for their new EP called Michigandering. And I'm sure the titles on Michigandering have got a story or two that we can talk about throughout the course of the hour.
Sir.
That's right. Ryan Shadbolt and the Weathermen all hour here today on WKAR's Current State. We'll also point out once again, we are streaming live on our Facebook page all hour. That's Current State from WKAR. Yesterday, we heard from a Michigan prison inmate and a former inmate and heard their thoughts about next week's presidential election. In Michigan, prison inmates are not allowed to vote. Today in Current State's ongoing Divided State series, we hear from another group often overlooked during elections, students. That's mainly because so many students haven't reached the legal voting age of 18 yet. Still, some number of Michigan students will be voting for the first time next week. At Holt High School, students have been holding mock presidential debates and elections. Current State's Brooke Allen visited the school and met the history teacher in charge of the project, Gavin Sykes McLaughlin. He says this isn't his first mock classroom election.
I've done this at four different schools. This is the third state that I've taught in, and I've tried to do it every year. There's an election either for president or for governor to hold a mock election so students get some civic participation.
So tell me, do you notice a difference in kids being really involved in the election process, or do you have to force this on them?
Well, I think to some extent, I'm hopefully getting them aware. That's part of my job as I see it, and the Social Studies Department as a whole. That's what we do in all the classes. We push the election. We push their voter registration. We do posters so kids are becoming aware of the issues that the candidates stand for. And then, as you mentioned, we have a mock debate coming up as well to try to make students aware before they go and cast their mock votes, you know, what the issues are. So to some extent, we are pushing it on them, but I think that a lot of them do have interest, and at a school this big, it seems like it's really been a challenge to generate a cohesive, you know, kind of interest in it because it's such a big school.
That's interesting that you kind of would have to keep mentioning it to the students.
They all have their things going on, their extracurriculars that they're involved in, their own lives. They know it's a mock election, so it doesn't necessarily count. I think a lot of them have said to me as I've been pushing the registration on them that, you know, hey, if this were real, I'd vote. So I've just been trying to keep an upbeat, positive, you know, hey, this is a real election for the country. You know, we're just trying to figure out if we had a voice as students here at Holt High School, how would we vote? Let's make the community aware of that. The young people would choose who, right? And so that's kind of how I'm trying to pitch it to them. So,
well, they're pretty much our next generation of voters.
Right. Yeah. So, again, you know, we're trying to get them involved. We've gotten, like 2 years ago when I did this at Williamson High School, we had 62% of the students vote, which is pretty high. You know, country's about 53%. So I thought that was pretty good. I don't have the final totals yet here for how many people are registered, but I'll have that soon to kind of see where we're at. But I know we were pushing 50% recently, so we're getting there.
Tell me, have you noticed, because this is your fourth school you've done this at, have those kids become legal voters now, the other ones?
Some of them. I taught at middle school in Massachusetts, and we did this with 6th through 8th graders as well before, and they get very excited about it because they, of course, have no say, and they're not even close really to say, so they got very excited about it. Some of those students are now in college, and I actually got an email last summer from one of my students who, as a 6th grader, and she thanked me, you know, for all getting her interested in politics all those years ago, so that was very nice.
Is there any proof that doing this in high school or middle school shows that they'll actually become active voters and take an interest, like you just said about that email?
Right. Well, here at Holt, because our seniors, some of them can vote, we are trying to kind of keep it balanced between pushing the real election and real voter registration for our seniors, as well as then for our younger students pushing this mock election. So I know that a lot of our seniors who are 18 are registering because of that effort, but I don't have any, you know, data to back up that they will become more involved or not because of this, but I hope so.
Well, I guess that email's data enough, right?
Yeah, that looks like it. I mean, it was really nice to see that. You're always glad when you hear from students and you had an impact on their lives, so.
Tell me what we're doing today.
Okay, so today we're going to be hearing from some of our students who are giving speeches in the upcoming debate. The debate happens the Friday before the mock election. We have an assembly where 400 or 500 students from, you know, the large student body here are going to go listen to these speeches. We've got three teams represented, if you will, the Libertarian, Republican, and Democrats. And 14 students have volunteered to give speeches. So it should be a good, you know, kind of mock debate, issue-oriented, all positive, trying to stay, you know, unlike the real world this year maybe, but trying to stay positive in the speeches and just giving them a chance to hear the issues. So today you're going to hear some of these students and little snippets from their speeches.
So give me some idea of the topics.
So each year, depending on whether it's a governor's election or whether it's a presidential election, we'll choose different topics. So for a presidential election, we've chosen foreign policy, education, environment, and economics, jobs, taxes, things like that.
The first student I meet is Jack Carlson. He's in 10th grade, sitting quietly in the back of the classroom reading a local newspaper as everyone streams into the room. The students preparing speeches have picked their candidate and the topic. Jack's topic is Donald Trump's foreign policy.
On his foreign policy, to sum it up into two words, is America first. First of all, countries receiving U.S. defense, and our U.S. defense treaties must pay their fair share. We have troops all over South Korea and Japan, and we get nothing out of that in return. The Iran nuclear deal must be renegotiated. Under no circumstances can we allow Iran to create nuclear weapons. And by signing into this treaty, not only are sanctions lifted on Iran, but no restrictions are currently under Iran's deal after the deadline is met. So after the deadline is met, they can create nuclear weapons. We have no inspectors in the nuclear facilities. And that is a danger to our foreign policy and to the world.
If you could really vote in reality, who would you vote for?
I would vote for Donald Trump.
Devin Anderson Torres is 16 and wants to be a journalist one day. Devin says the mock election has opened his eyes to the world of politics.
I think it's cool that the students and the faculty and everybody gets to learn a little bit more about each of the candidates and get a chance to, you know, vote themselves for some of them who can't vote yet.
And has this been kind of a learning experience for you? Are you interested in politics already, or did this kind of start it for you?
This election is really the first year that I've paid attention to politics at all, but I've really learned a lot throughout these last couple months.
And do you ever talk politics with your parents?
Yeah, I do a lot. I talk with my stepdad a lot. He's a Trump supporter, so I kind of go back and forth on that.
So who are you supporting?
Probably Gary Johnson.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And how come?
I don't like Trump or Hillary.
Lillian Franks is a ninth grader. She likes Donald Trump's stand on education.
Trump likes to state that every child in America deserves a great education and an opportunity to achieve their dreams. We will enhance education options for students through school choice and charters and respect homeschoolers in their quest for educational alternatives. We will also make it easier for families to afford college so students aren't buried in debt. Many college students are swimming in debt due to loans. Trump believes the government gains too much money and student loans shouldn't be one of them. These loans should be used as an investment in America's future. Maybe we can't make them fully end, but we should help students work towards controlling them. I would vote for Trump because he says a lot about what people really think about, and he's actually saying it, and he's really open about a lot of topics, and I agree with a lot of things that he says.
And what do you want to be when you grow up?
I've been really looking forward to being a doctor. I've been trying to go to, like, the local fire department and get a tour in the place, and I want to be an EMT and then slowly become a doctor.
Yeah. What kind of doctor?
A surgeon.
And if you could change one thing about the world, what would you change?
I'd probably change racism because I know it won't fully end, but in English, we are reading To Kill a Mockingbird, and that has a lot to do with racism, and I feel like a big way to stop racism is just to stop talking about it and try and accept everyone for who they are.
Jason Klein is 15 years old and says he's excited about the Libertarian on the ballot.
Johnson is who I'm really kind of supporting. I really think he's qualified. He's a successful governor, and I really like him more than the other candidates.
And what one thing speaks out to you about him?
He really seems like he's in it for the well-being of the country and the good of the people. And sometimes I don't know if I get that vibe from the other candidates.
So what do you want to do when you graduate?
When I graduate, I'm looking to be a teacher, actually.
And from everything you've been paying attention to, have you watched any of the debates?
I have watched. I've watched some, but I haven't been able to watch, like, the full debates. But I have gotten to see some of them.
So what was your impression of that?
I don't know. It's not what I expected. I haven't really paid too much attention to politics before now, and it just wasn't what I really expected when I was coming into it. So it's kind of weird.
Lily Spears is in 10th grade and believes a woman can be commander-in-chief.
If I could vote right now legally, I'd vote for Hillary Clinton. I agree with a lot of things that she has to say, and I really like how she's pro-women and pro-choice. And I like some of her plans to make the economy better. And I like her education plans, too. I think free college, is for those who are less fortunate, is a very fair and good idea because everybody deserves to have a chance at going to college.
Do you talk politics with your family?
I do. I talk lots of politics with my family. My mom is very outspoken with her opinions, and she's pro-Hillary also, and she's really adamant about, even if I don't agree with her, she wants me to have a say in the upcoming election because it's going to be I'm going to be living it. It's going to be our president. I've always been big into politics, and I do watch all the debates, even if I couldn't vote. And this debate is actually something really cool that I think I've always wanted to do. I love debating in class, so it's cool that we get to debate on something that's really real and it's right here, happening right now.
Bryce Boersma is 15 years old and likes to debate the issues.
I like to get other people's opinions on the nominees. It's really interesting to me to see how they view this election. And like, I like to express my opinions to them, and I like to see how they kind of respond to it. It's just really interesting to get other responses from like Trump supporters and see what they think of Donald Trump.
So if you could change one thing about the world, what would you change?
Right now, I think it's really important to close corporate loopholes, because all of these rich people, these very, very rich people, are not paying taxes. And that kind of offends me, because the working man, he has to pay taxes. But the fact that all of these rich people can just get away with not paying any taxes, it disgusts me.
Chloe Skolton is 15 years old and says people should not take voting for granted.
I get kind of offended when people don't want to vote, just because I can't imagine living in a different country where you're not able to vote. I think that as an American, you should definitely vote, and I don't know, it would just make me feel bad to not vote.
In all, 54% of the students at Holt High School registered to vote in the mock election. Mr. Sykes-McLaughlin says that percentage is in line with the country overall. In 2012, 53% of eligible Americans voted. We only have to wait a few days longer to find out the percentage for 2016. For Current State, I'm Brooke Allen.
What is the shape of your home state? Does it look like a rectangle? Or does it have a panhandle? The one I love has a mitten shape. Fits in the palm of my hand. It goes with me wherever I can. The best pocket map is Michigan. It goes with me wherever I can. Where's your hometown? In your state, north or south, east or west, or in between, raise your hand and I'll point you the way, and you will know where I have been. My state fits in the palm of my. It goes with me wherever I can. The best pocket map is Michigan. It goes with me wherever I can. Above the bridge where it's said to stay, my other hand can show you the way from the Sioux to Keweenaw. My stay fits in the palm of my. It's Michigan. It goes with me wherever I can. My state fits in the palm of my hand. It goes with me.
Pocket Map. It's Ryan Shadbolt and the Weatherman live here in Studio S on Current State's Live Music Friday. David Eggebrack handled the mandolin solo on that number, and that is a track from their new EP called Michigandering, which they will perform tonight at the Robin Theater in Lansing. More from Ryan Shadbolt and the Weathermen on the way here on WKAR. Glad you could join us today. There's still euphoria in the air for Chicago Cubs fans after the team's dramatic World Series victory Wednesday night. While the big leagues and the minors may be done for the season, preparations continue for next year. Here in Lansing, the boys of summer will have a fresh new field awaiting them next spring. Current State's Kevin Lavery joins me now with more on the upgrades now underway at Cooley Law School Stadium, the home of the Lansing Lugnuts. What's going on at the ballpark, Kevin?
Mark, the Lugnuts are pumped about their next season, so much so that they're already rolling out the red carpet, except this one is green. There's a new layer of sod covering the field, which should be completely finished by later today. So I spoke with Lugnuts general manager Nick Greaser about the project at the stadium as we were serenaded by the sound of diesel engines and mechanical beeping.
We are doing pretty much a complete transformation and replacement of our playing surface. Everything from, obviously, as you can see behind me, all of the sod is being replaced. In addition to that, we're re-leveling the infield, we're replacing the warning track, we're upgrading our irrigation, we're adding new drains where needed. We're getting a state-of-the-art, brand-new playing surface that we haven't done in about 11 years. So it's been time to replace it, and what you're seeing now will be our brand-new playing surface come opening day next year.
Is a decade roughly the wear and tear shelf life of a baseball field?
Yeah, it is. Obviously, how you maintain it and care for it over that time makes a big difference in that. We've done a pretty good job over the years. So, yeah, that's about the normal shelf life. Obviously, the major leagues do it a little bit more regularly than what the minor leagues do. But, it was certainly needed, I would say slightly overdue. But that's the reality of a minor league baseball park, is that you deal with the elements that you have. And so we've had a great field. We've always had a great field. And this will just add to it.
So this is early November, Nick. Your season ended about a month ago with the Crosstown Showdown. But in the interim, you were using the field for something out of the ordinary, something unusual, I think.
Yeah, we had a couple of events after the season was over. I think you're referring to our mini golf at the ballpark. And we did that because it is a once in a 10-year opportunity. You can't really do that on a playing field that you're going to open up for a baseball season the next year. So we took the opportunity, had some fun with it. Our timing was a little pushed out, I guess you could say. We should have been installing this a few weeks ago, or we might have done our mini golf a little bit longer. We did 5 days of it. We had over 1,500 fans come out and play, which exceeded our expectations. So we just took the opportunity to utilize the ballpark in a new way and figured, why not? Our groundskeeper kind of used all the baseball elements we had around. He had some ideas on how to map it out and draw it up, and I think it offered a good benefit for a lot of our fans in the area that they could come out and play mini golf on a professional baseball field.
What's the advantage of real sod versus AstroTurf? That's a brand name. Is that word even used anymore in the industry?
Not much, but you know, the synthetic surfaces. Yeah, the real sod. For one, I just like the looks of it. I'm a baseball purist. To me, it's not even though we're a Toronto affiliate and they've got synthetic. To me, the natural sod is the way to go. And we actually consulted with our friends at the Blue Jays, and they preferred. Even though they don't have natural grass, they preferred to have a natural grass field for their guys' learning abilities. So the ball definitely plays different. You don't get the crazy hops, you don't get the crazy bounces. You know, it's a little bit more true. But more than none, I think it's the aesthetics of it. I just like a natural grass. I think most fans, when they come to a ballpark, especially in baseball, like the natural field. It's not as durable. I'd be lying if I said that I wouldn't mind the durability of going the other route. You know, things like concerts and different events that you do, you really don't have to worry about damaging it. But in my mind, that's a sacrifice that's well worth it. Yeah, we're excited about it. I mean, you know, one thing to add to this, too, is that, you know, we've hired professionals to do this. The company that's installed it is Busch Turf. They just came out of the Brewers Stadium and installed new Milwaukee's. Actually, our sod that they're installing right now came from the same sod farm and actually was cut right next to the new Chicago Cubs field that they're installing in a couple of weeks. So we have a major league caliber field that's going in right now, which we're extremely excited about it. And, you know, the average fan, they come into the ballpark and they look at the grass and they say, oh, yeah, it looks awesome. But when you really dive into it, and if you put a before and after photo next to each other, I think the fans are really going to be impressed by it. And, you know, the caliber of baseball that we have and that we accommodate for our team. they're really going to notice the difference as far as the playability of the field. So it's we're extremely excited about it. It's a fun process.
We're talking with Nick Greaser, the general manager of the Lansing Lugnuts. Now, the contractor, Nick, is from St. Louis. The sod comes from Wisconsin. Now, all the MSU folks are saying, hey, we're like the turf grass research capital of the known world. What's up with that?
Sure. Michigan State's been very involved. We obviously work with them. Our last three or four groundskeepers have come from their turf program. We were working with them to get some sod from them, and really the seasons in Michigan. And they're a research center. They're not a turf farm. So we certainly worked back and forth with them, but it ended up making more sense to go with the guys that do this for a living every single day. And then we were utilizing Michigan State resources as far as, helping us, how do we maintain it, cultural practices, those things. We actually had one of the turf programs out here this morning kind of watching them install it so they could get that firsthand experience. So while it didn't come from Michigan State, we're certainly involved with them, and we've worked very closely with them on utilizing their resources.
Now, I realize you have to upgrade. You have to make things safer, bigger, and better. You have to improve things. You may have noticed over the years, though, Nick, that baseball players are pretty superstitious. They don't like a lot of change. They like routine. Is there anything to be said about the first time that your Lugnuts walk on this new field?
It'll be a welcome change. This is one thing that I think any ball player would prefer, to have a brand new playing surface, than anything superstitious. And, you know, the way that minor leagues work, most of our guys are going to, you know, we're not going to have the same crew that coming back. So I'm not worried about that whatsoever. I think they'll welcome the change purely from the playing surface aesthetics alone. Things that they're noticing that the average fan doesn't notice, how the ball plays, you know, some of the compaction and some of the hard areas in the field from just, you know, from being an older field. So they'll certainly welcome that change. There's no issues with superstition on that one, I don't think.
Now, you and I were talking on Thursday afternoon, and it looks like, I'm going to guess, about 75 to 80% of this is finished all around the actual diamond itself, and a little bit toward the edges still needs to be put in.
Yeah, the sod will be completed probably by about this time tomorrow. And then the last couple steps, as you can see from the rain yesterday, we have some puddles on the infield. So they're going to come back in and level the infield. You shouldn't see those puddles regardless of the type of rain. So that's the second to last step. They'll come in, they'll get rid of all the lips where the sod meets the turf or meets the dirt. They'll level all that out. So we'll have a whole new infield as well. Then the very last step is coming in and replacing the warning track. So again, you can see how there's puddles along the warning track from the rain that we got yesterday. That'll all be replaced. We replaced the outfield portion of the warning track 2 years ago. So pretty much from foul pole to foul pole will all be redone. Then our groundskeeper will come in, rebuild our mound, our bullpen mounds, rebuild the game mound. But that'll all be done before next spring. So he might wait and do that in March when the weather breaks, hopefully.
Is your groundskeeper here, Lenny, I understand?
He is. He's floating around here somewhere. We were trying to get him to come up to answer a few more of the scientific questions, but I think he's got his hands full right now.
He's getting back to the land here.
Yeah, exactly.
Obviously, we're looking right at Ballpark Village and its multicolored platform, and this past season was the first season that was brand new. What's been the reception from people who live there, from people who come to the ballpark, about having that accessibility right there?
Sure, it's been very well received. You know, they've been sold out, I think, since the time that they opened, and it's been a very positive response. We've learned how to live with one another, and you know, make sure that they have some amenities that they have available in the ballpark, and you know, how do we kind of co-mingle, because we operate the first floor of that building. So it's been a really good experience. Not only kind of the talk about around the nation, we won some national economic development awards. We brought urban living downtown, helped to bring more urban living downtown, and I think it makes the ballpark feel like a major league park. That's the selfish part of me speaking, but it really, as you walk in, you know, a lot of minor league parks don't have anything past the foul poles except for some grass areas, maybe a couple venues here or there, but you walk into this place now, and even with only about 7,000 seats, it really has that major league feel to it. So it's exceeded my expectations. It's been a great project. It's been a really cool thing for the city of Lansing, as well as for the ballpark. It's kind of re-energized us in our 21st year. So we couldn't be happier.
Are you happy with the attendance levels as of late?
Hey, I'm a perfectionist, so I'd always like to be better. We had a rough April and May this past season, but we've got a great promotional schedule for next year, and we anticipate, our numbers are still been great. You know, our first year projection in 1996 was 250,000. We drew 320,000 in year 21 last year. So while you come to the ballpark on a Monday night, it's going to be fairly slow. Our bread and butter is still in the Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday nights. And that's really where we impact our attendance. And unfortunately, sometimes weather does have something to do with that. But if we get a mild spring next year, and with our promotional schedule coming up, I think we'll have a great season again. I think really the only other thing to add is that, you know, as part of our vision with, you know, our friends at LETFA, the city of Lansing, this is really the culmination of a two-year project. This was the last piece. So we did about a $26 million renovation and development project that included upgrades to a lot of the physical part of the stadium, a lot of infrastructure repairs and upgrades, things like changing the seats, adding scoreboards, you know, new POS system in the food service, new venues, new enhancements for our fans. And then obviously the big portion that we already talked about was, you know, that building and adding that, but also things like new playground, new shop area, new batting cage. We just overhauled the entire stadium. This was the last part of it, and it really helped keep our ballpark from deteriorating over the next 20 years. So as part of that, we extended our lease with the city of Lansing, so we'll be here for the next, 19 years now. So Lugnuts aren't going anywhere, and it's been a very good partnership with all the folks at the city to really have the vision of downtown and us being an anchor of downtown development. And as you can see, over the last 20 years, it's exactly what's happened.
What are your plans for the use of this field during the offseason until spring training begins again?
For the field, probably not much. We'll let it root in and grow and do its thing. You know, we're not going to do much, anything crazy. We certainly won't be doing any ice skating this year on the field. However, we're always trying to find ways to utilize the ballpark. So we have our banquet, year-round banquet center out there called The View, which we do catering space. We're doing about 125 non-baseball events alone in 2016. So we're always looking for, you know, new opportunities to use that, meeting space, holiday parties, you name it. But then we're also looking at how do we use the concourse, how do we use the plaza out front, how can we use the ballpark in more effective ways. We've got some big events coming up, but really, you know, we're a summertime activity as far as large ticketed events for the community. And so we've got some plans in place to try to add some more events for the fans.
I got to ask this one last question, Nick. You guys are an affiliate of the Toronto Blue Jays, but before that, for many years, you were a Chicago Cubs affiliate. So I've got to ask, as someone who is in the industry, your thoughts on the end of the drought, the death of the Billy Goat?
Well, I'm excited. I just think stories like that in any sport is just an exciting story. I personally grew up in Dayton, Ohio, so I'm a Cincinnati Reds fan. So as weird as it sounds, even though they're in my division, I was rooting for the Cubs last night. I'm not a Cleveland Indians fan. I'm a Reds fan. So, and I've always kind of had I worked here when the Cubs were our affiliate, so I've always kind of had a loose association with them. And I'm a big Theo Epstein fan, like a lot of my peers are. So I think it's good for baseball. I think it's good for the sport. I think it's good for the country that was the outcome. And what a great game. I mean, you couldn't ask for a better scenario. Down 3-1 in the series, coming back to take a game seven to extra innings. I think just the excitement of that, even if it went the other way and the Indians won, I think it was the whole outcome was a great experience just for the sport of baseball.
And Nick, I'm sure you're very relieved that there's no chance of some wayward goat swimming across the lake and chewing on the new sod.
Absolutely.
We've been talking with Nick Greaser, the general manager of the Lansing Lugnuts, about the new sod that's being put down at Jackson Field at Cooley Law School Stadium in downtown Lansing, home of the Lugnuts. Nick, thanks for taking me out to the field.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
For Current State, I'm Kevin Lavery.
Never knew life could be so grand. Each breath is a gift. Today's even more. Beside you is heaven on earth. Why bother dreaming of a better day? Oh yeah, what's right here in front of us? Who am I the dreaming of a better day? When we have what's here and now. I never knew the power of a smile. A hug, a compliment or gesture. Facts might seem so small, but they create a chain reaction. Why bother dreaming of a better day? Oh yeah, what's right here in front of us? Why bother dreaming of a better day? When we ask here and now. I never knew passage of this song is very simple. Well, you can't change the past, so forget it. Don't you fret about tomorrow. Just make the most of every moment. Why bother dreaming of a better day? Oh yeah, what's right here in front of us? Why bother dreaming of a better day when we have what's here and now? When we have what's here and now? When we have what's here and now? When we have what's here and now?
Ryan Chadbolt and the Weatherman live here in Studio S. On WKAR's Current State, our live Music Friday. A reminder, if you're online, we are streaming our program live on our Facebook page here, Current State from WKAR. That's if you're one of our morning listeners. Later in the day, that will become a file if you want to check that out. Welcome back, Ryan. Good to see you.
You too, Mark.
Michigandering is your sixth recording project, I'm told.
Yes, it is.
You spent a lot of time in the studio over the years, but your first time with this particular congregation?
Yeah, first time with this particular lineup. In fact, first time the six of us have been in the same space together performing at the same time.
That's like Crosby, Stills, and Nash at Woodstock, man. They were never before. They were never on stage before Woodstock. That's magical. Michigandering, intriguing title. Are all these songs about Michigan, or do they involve Michigan in some way?
In some ways, there's six songs on this EP, and in some ways they all are inspired by Michigan. But really, what I consider the bookends of the album, probably the first of the six songs was April in Michigan, which I wrote about 4 years ago.
Okay.
And then the last of the six was Pocket Map, which we played a little bit earlier.
Real clever song.
That one was written just a couple months before we went to the studio. So that was kind of the first and the last piece. Until Pocket Map came along, I had no idea of calling it a Michigan-themed album.
We'll hear April in Michigan here coming up in a few minutes. Sounds like a lot of stormy weather in there.
You know what it's like in Michigan that time of year.
Oh, painfully well. It's the heaven or hell month here in Michigan. That's kind of. Did you write a song involving Lansing or the Lansing area?
I don't think anything on this particular album has a direct Lansing reference that I can think of offhand.
Okay. It reminds me of, you ever heard of Sufjan Stevens? You ever heard of that guy? He's a Michigan native and alternative music kind of guy. He's written a few albums. I think he's written separate CDs about individual states. There's like a CD about Illinois and a CD about Wisconsin. One of them is called what?
Come on, Feel the Illinois.
Okay, there we go. I'm getting a yes in my headphones. My kids tell me about these things, and I never completely figure them out. How long have you been working on Michigandering?
Well, as I mentioned, started writing the songs about 4 years ago. We went into the studio, I think, April of this year.
Okay.
April 2016. And we kind of came in bits and pieces, recorded single parts mostly. We did some traveling during the summer. So we were recording on and off from April through end of summer, early fall.
I'm sure there are perfectionists in the recording studio. We all know that.
I probably fall under that category.
Okay. How you fall into the perfect? So do you edit segments together that come from different takes, or is everything live one take? You do a lot of it.
Yeah. So when we went in the studio the first weekend, we had our bass player and Ryan on drums. We did the bass and drums over a weekend, and then I came in, did guitar and vocals, and I have no idea how many takes I do. I probably do about 15 to 20 takes of every part.
Hmm.
Just, I want to make sure that I have it, that feels, it has to feel right to me when I play a complete take.
Well, you want your best on vinyl or CD or whatever the case may be.
Yeah. And if I'm in the studio by myself, I can get through a bunch of takes one after another. I guess Dave did the same when he came in and did Fiddle and Mandolin. That was probably my favorite day in the studio was when Dave came in, because we just got to listen to him do his thing for an entire day. We got to spectate for that one.
Dave is on back on Mandolin here. Yeah. Let's hear the song we talked about just a minute ago. This is called April in Michigan.
All right. 1, 2, 3, 4.
April snowflakes, you're not wanted round here no more. April snowflakes, you're not welcome round here no more. We want to see you that bright sunshine again. Beautiful Michigan, springtime. Chilly breeze, you're not wanted round here no more. Chilly north wind breeze, you're not welcome round here no more. We want to feel that warm southern air again. And our beautiful Michigan, springtime.
April in Michigan, Ryan Shadbolt and the Weathermen, Ryan and David Agabrek, Deacon Earl on bass, Roger Gentry and Benjamin Hall on backing vocals. Now meteorologist Ryan Shadbolt has our 3-day forecast. Ryan?
All right, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you're prepared for a fine weekend forecast. Today on Friday, we're looking at sunny, high near 54. Tonight, clear, low around 42, so we might be able to avoid some frost. Tomorrow, mostly sunny, high near 62. Before you go to bed Saturday night, do not forget to set your clocks behind 1 hour. We're approaching daylight saving, or I should say the end of daylight saving. Sunday, another sunny day, high of 62. So a pleasant weekend for early November.
There you go. We just proved that we are dealing with real weathermen here. Remind our listeners why that name. There's an interesting story there.
Well, for my full-time job, I'm a faculty member up at Central Michigan University. I've been teaching geography and meteorology classes up there since 2011.
How'd you get into that?
I think those of us who are interested and passionate about weather, I think we kind of come out of the womb that way. So many of us that are in that field, we tell the same story, that we don't really remember when the origin of it was. We just kind of have always been passionate about it.
And you explain the nuts and bolts of meteorology and climate in your classes?
I do. And
how
it does,
weather happens.
Yeah, yeah. So, for example, I'm always telling this story about how the sun comes up, sun heats the ground heats the air above it, air gets warm, warm air rises, it transports heat and moisture into the air, that creates clouds and precipitation. I've told that story so many times that a song's come out of that. One of my older songs called Beautiful World is based on that whole story.
You're excited about tonight's gig? This is a slew of new songs that a lot of people are going to be hearing for the first time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So most of us have been playing around the Lansing area for a while in various groups. We formed this lineup, Ryan Shebelt and the Weathermen, early in 2015. We joined you shortly thereafter when we played here last time.
That's right.
And in fact, April in Michigan, we just play. I think that's what we closed the show with when we played at that last session here. So we've been playing a lot of shows through 2015 and 2016. A lot of shows, at least for us as full-time employees. I think I counted this weekend's show 25 for me, which is a lot for me trying to fit into an already overburdened work schedule.
Doors at 7:30 tonight. Music starts at 8 o'clock, and your bass player, Deacon Earl, who's appeared and performed on Current State's Live Music Friday in his own right, opens the show tonight at 8 o'clock, and then everybody will hear all the songs from Michigandering and probably a few others. How can people access your music, Ryan?
Well, what I recommend most highly is to come out to the release show tonight. For $10, you can get in the door, and that does include a copy of the disc. We'll be selling discounted discs tonight for $5. Normally, it'll be $6, $6 for a six-song disc. The place where you can find it online is Bandcamp.com. So if you go to ryanshadbolt.bandcamp.com, you can stream all the songs there. You can purchase the songs, either individually or as a complete album. You can also purchase the CD there.
You got another live gig or two lined up after tonight?
Not in the immediate near future. I am taking a couple months off to concentrate on work, concentrate on some family business. But I'll come back in January. I'm playing at the Art and Craft Beer Fest in Rio Town in January, and just confirmed a gig with Ellison Brewing in February.
All right. Ryan Shadbolt and the Weathermen, we're streaming it all live here on our Current State Facebook page, Current State from WKAR. That'll be a file later in the day. Ryan already reminded you to set your clocks back an hour as we return to standard time. We're going to let the band play us out here with Daylight Saving. How appropriate. This wasn't planned. Now, was it, guys? No, we don't do that kind of thing on this show. Daylight Savings Time, Ryan Shadbolt and the Weathermen on Current State. Have a great day.
One, two, three, four. We find ourselves in the wintertime when the nights are oh so drear. December, January, and February mark the cold and dark times of the year. It's daylight saving. When we fall behind, we might gain an hour of sleep a night, but now it's dark by dinner time. Then comes the spring months, when the birds wake us from bed.
may give a glimpse of what lies ahead. It's daylight saving. When we spring ahead, we might lose an hour of sleep a night, but at least we see light before bed. Summer months, the warm and bright days.